1000-watt News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000-watt 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the BC. It is Sunday, the 6th of May, Anno Domini 2007, and you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dan Cole.
And at 8 minutes after the hour, we're going
to
be
No. You need to back up a second.
Oh, excuse me.
Not fair at all. Go ahead.
I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Dan Cole.
And I'm Rob Linton.
Shouldn't the news person, once they're done, go prepare the next newscast?
You're the news guy now. Did you hear what Randy said about him?
What?
Randy said, yeah, he was terrible on the board, so we made him do news.
Well, he needs to go take some elocution lessons. It's been a while since he's spoken on the air.
Oh!
And around the rugged rocks, the ragged rascal ran.
And what didn't I properly elocute?
Well, let's start there.
Well, you know, I do strive every day on the radio. Yeah, the radio to be
very quiet with doing radio.
To be the quality broadcasters that you all are in that room, but it is so difficult. But we all need goals in life.
Yeah, need goals.
You got any more donuts in there?
Yeah, we do actually.
Sweet, I'll be right in.
Yeah. They're for the Soundbites team, not the news guy.
Listen, when I get an email, all right, that says, it's your turn to bring the donuts,
yeah,
I'm part of the Soundbites
yes,
team.
Yes, you are.
So that'll be next week.
You're right.
Next week you're back on.
Whatever.
You can have a donut next week.
All right. All right. Let's start with Apple. Apple has admitted that some batteries in its MacBook and MacBook Pro line of laptops have performance issues. I quote, and has issued a software update to fix the problem. I don't quite know how you fix a battery problem with software, but they managed it. Among the symptoms of batteries that are affected are swelling, the battery not being recognized or not charging, and a shorter than expected battery life. The company said that the problem, which could affect any laptop or batteries bought between February 06 and April 07, is not a safety risk. Let me translate that. You're probably not going to have an explosion or a fire.
Yeah, this is different than the battery recall from last year now, wasn't it?
Right.
Yeah. Which you still should get your battery replaced anyway.
Right. They have offered to replace any defective batteries. In the meantime, users could continue to use their current battery, Apple said. Reports of swollen batteries have circulated since the MacBook range was introduced early last year, and visibly deformed battery packs were among the problems the update was designed to address. If symptoms persist after the update, which you can download from Apple's website, users should make contact with their local store to arrange for replacement batteries free of charge, Apple said. Is that true?
Well, you can go to the Apple store and they'll mail it off for you, or you can go to Apple's website and Apple will mail you directly a battery replacement.
There you go. Despite the problems, MacBook remains a successful range for Apple. The company recently reported that sales of its portable computers rose from 498,000 to 891,000 over the 12 months ending March 31st, helping boost quarterly profits to $770 million for three months.
They're growing at like three times the industry average.
Yeah. That's
But Apple's dying, yeah.
Yeah, but Apple's dying. You know, it's a marginal operating system, and it's a marginal company to begin with. I mean, you know, they only sold 1 million in the last quarter. That's
Well, what's interesting, it was 1 million computers and 10 million iPods.
Well, that's the thing.
Apple's
revenue is being driven by the iPod at this point.
Yep.
It's a pretty astonishing thing. So
there was actually interesting news out of the iTunes store. One of the American Idol recordings, which is an exclusive iTunes recording, hit the Billboard top 10 chart.
Wow.
So an online iTunes exclusive song made it to Billboard.
I'm shocked that Billboard is doing online sales now. I think that's great.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be a real eye opener for the industry.
Yeah.
Have the non-DRM'd stuff started hitting?
Not yet. They said May, so that's probably any day now.
Yeah, that's why I asked. All right. That's some pretty astonishing stuff that's going on there, yep. As far as...
The EMI removing the DRM on all of their catalog of songs.
DRM, of course, Digital Restriction Management. This is the thing that prevents you from copying it or playing it on any device you'd like to play it on.
Which is, well, it's illegal to copy it anyway, but now they were taking overly strong enforcement of the copyright laws.
Right.
So now EMI is removing copy protection. You'll be able to buy unprotected songs from the EMI digital label for $1.29 here in the U.S.
As opposed to 99 cents.
Right. Which will still be available if you want the cheaper price with the DRM. So it's Apple giving choices.
You know, it's 30 cents, and I realize that that makes it easy to steal, but everybody within the sound of my voice, go buy the music. Let's prove that EMI is right so that other people remove digital rights management.
Yeah, the rest of the big four, you know, the other three big music companies are saying, what? No, we want to make the DRM worse so you have less chance of copying it.
And here's how it works. If EMI doesn't sell a lot, then everybody will stop. Then everybody will point to them and say, well, that's why everybody stole it. And then they'll keep DRM. If you all, I know that most of you listening to me pride yourselves on stealing music. I understand that. But if you will all go out and buy, once it's available on iTunes, go out and buy music that is not DRM, that has no digital rights management on it, then it will prove to the industry that we don't want digital rights management or digital restriction management, depending on how you prefer
it. It's an interesting branding experience, too, because no one knows what label their band is on. So now EMI is got a good chance of branding themselves.
Right. So, but definitely go out and buy that music, and let's send a message to the RIAA that we don't want digital rights management. All right, have I got time for a call? I do. I have time for a call. Our first caller is Dan from Webster, New York. Welcome, Dan. What's your question?
Good morning, gentlemen. I've got a problem with a pesky Trojan, which I found in a machine that I inherited. I've run the Tango and gotten it out of every place except for a couple of spots in the registry. And when I boot up the machine, I'm getting a little error message saying, gee, I can't find this particular file.
Right.
I'm in the registry right now. I've run RegClean and Easy Cleaner. They haven't been able to get it. And so
The good news is that you don't actually have the Trojan anymore.
Absolutely.
You've only got the remnant in the registry. It's just trying to call something that's no longer there.
Right. Now, I found it in the registry in two different spots. Do I dare just delete those two lines, or can I comment them out?
But it depends on what's in there that's causing it, you know, the specific code. Yep. Because it can mask itself as one name to generate other names.
Right, uh-huh. But if you think you found it, I would comment it out rather than delete it. Right.
Yeah, if it's a simple load equals or run equals, that's probably pretty safe to remove.
One is in the, calling in the shell, it's explorer.exec:etc,
right.
Calling the file. The other is in user init.
Right, and so these are all in run once?
No, it's the shell definition. Yeah,
it's in the shell def. Yeah,
you can't comment that completely out because then your shell, your mm-hmm. desktop won't run, and that's one of the ways the spyware and Trojans get in is they attach themselves
to
the desktop.
I tried commenting that out, and it said, desktop is gone.
You may be able to remove that little bit.
Yeah.
That's pointing to the Trojan and put it back to explore.exe.
Just make it explore.exe, mm-hmm.
which is right. the name of the desktop program. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, and can I pull out the user init?
You should be able to. Well, again, you can't comment it.
Make a backup copy of the registry.
Done.
And then go ahead, and try deleting it out.
Or I can just make it usernet.exe and get rid of the rest of it.
Right.
Beautiful. I think you've solved my problem, gentlemen.
Okay. There we go. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. Have fun. Our next thing we're going to do is we're going to go.
Nice segue.
Take a little break.
Nice recovery.
Thank you.
Bonus points for Nick.
We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, the mighty Dan Cole, and me, Nick Francesco. At 16 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Are you on the list? Who's on that list is a matter of grave importance.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I have the power to keep these three in line.
That's exactly right. He does.
But who's maintaining the list?
At 21 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbite. Dan's got his hero stuff all cranked up, ready to go.
Monday night, can't get here fast enough. Yeah.
I still say
when I come in on Tuesday, we geek out over... Well,
that's what I do with Dan heroes. When I come in on Sunday, because we both have our theories.
Right, we've all got theories.
And I still say it's going to be Peter and Siler coming together that caused the explosion. But as I was telling Dan, sorry for the sidebar here, but I think... And what's our show anyways?
That's right.
I think it's going to wind up... They're going to draw... They're leading, building it all up, and I don't think anything's going to... Dan would say, well, the big explosion is going to happen by the end of the season. I don't think so. I think they're going to really pork a lot of people off and wait until next season
to
do
anything. Saying next season is a whole different... They've been saying all along, next season is a whole different set of heroes.
I think it's going to be still some of them and carry it, get them on into the next
season. Yeah, but I think they have to end with the explosion. I honestly think the end of the season is going to be the explosion. Done, and then blackout and wait till next season. That's my theory. All right, listen, if you're a user of Trillion, if you're a user of Trillion or Winamp, you've got some worries. Security holes in both of those desktop software applications could put millions of computer users at risk of code execution attacks. The flaws, rated highly critical, were flagged in the Trillion cross-platform instant messaging program and Nullsoft's Winamp media player. Trillion, the multi-protocol chat tool that allows users to connect to IRC, AIM, ICQ, MSN, and Yahoo within a single client, is vulnerable to three separate IRC flaws that could allow for the interception of private conversations or execution of code as the currently logged on user. And then there's some technical stuff, CTCP pings and UTF-8 characters and blah, 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 blah. But the important thing to note is that you've got a problem with that. There is a patch out. So if you update to version 3.1.5.0, then you're good. A separate advisory warns of a highly critical system access flaw that affects the Winamp media player. This vulnerability is due to an error within the handling of MP4 files that can be exploited to cause memory corruption via a specially crafted MP4 file, according to an alert from Secunia, which is a security company. Successful exploitation allows execution of arbitrary code, and exploits for this vulnerability are already in circulation. So check Winamp for updates. I have to admit, I've never been a fan of Trillion. They had they were doing viral marketing at one point, and I was getting an email every single day from them suggesting, you know, you really ought to try Trillion. I called them. I screamed at them. I had my lawyers send them letters. They kept writing back saying, we can't help it. We don't know where this is coming from. And I kept telling them, here's the address. It's an address inside Trillion.
It's the marketing company you hired.
Right. So I am truly not a fan of Trillion. I don't care if the product is the greatest thing since laser sliced bread. I will never, ever use it.
It still causes issues.
Although I certainly used, when I was using a Windows machine, I used Winamp all the time. Great product. So, but make sure you update both of those to make sure that you don't have vulnerability.
I still like Total Recorder.
Total Recorder is great.
I mean, it gives you so much flexibility that you can do. Yep. I mean, I've even changed.
It's only, what, $15?
Yeah, $15. And he gives you all the interim updates.
Right. Right. I always loved that. Well, I was the one who turned you onto it.
Yeah.
It was a good program.
That was, what, 5, 6 years ago?
Yeah.
At least?
Yeah. Our next caller is Carl from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Carl. What's your question?
Hi, guys. You have a great show.
Thank you.
A few weeks ago, you mentioned that there was a scrapbook site that you thought was particularly good.
Yeah, it's a local person here in Rochester. Yeah.
What is it?
Oh, you want to know?
I thought we put it on the links. Yeah. Let me check.
It's called scrapsmart.com.
Oh, I bet that was one of the weeks we didn't have internet.
Yeah, I bet it was.
Could be. It's scrapsmart.com, and it's a local friend of ours, Stan Feingold, who runs Visual Horizons. Him and his wife also do this scrapbooking. Okay. And like I say, it's unbelievable.
We talked about it in April of 2005. under digital scrapbooks.
Okay, and you also mentioned that the Midwest is a hot place for scrapbookers.
Oh, yeah.
It is huge.
Any place in particular, any area?
Well, email, you know, go to the Scrap Smart.
Okay.
And I'm sure, I mean, what Stan's got, Stan and Rini have there is unbelievable.
Okay.
And you can check with them, email them. I know he'd be more than glad to help you. But, yes, well, it's all over. I mean, even here in Rochester, I'm coming to find out through my sisters. Two of my sisters are heavily getting into it, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I manufacture a product for scrapbookers. So that's why I was interested to, you know, to find major, you know, sites and areas where the I didn't know the Midwest was that hot. That's something I had.
There's nothing else to do on a long winter night.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, there is. I've been in the Midwest. Oh, yes, there is.
Well, thanks a
lot. What is your site?
It's just being built. It's called Quality Site at Walsco.com.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Our next caller is Jack from Scottsville, New York. Welcome, Jack. What's your question?
Well, hi, morning, guys.
Hi there.
Boot sequence. Is there any shortcut to setting the boot sequence without continually entering the BIOS?
No.
No.
Some biases? what is it? HP, you can hit F12 and pick the drive you want to boot from before it goes into BIOS.
Yeah, but no, he wants it automatically to go into the BIOS. You can't.
I know, or do you want to change the boot volume without going into the BIOS?
What I'm trying to do is I'm running a Linux program off a bootable CD just to see how Linux is.
Sure.
And it has the whole program on. Mm-hmm. It's called Napix.
Right.
But I don't want to keep going in and then set it. Then
really, the only thing you can do is pop that CD out before you reboot.
Yeah, set it to boot CD first, and then when you want to boot the CD, put it in. When you don't want to boot the CD, take it out.
That's really the safest thing to do, the easiest thing to do, rather. We have to take a break. Rob Linton, ladies and gentlemen, will be in to do the news, the weather, the sports, all the stuff.
Didn't
you really
work
listen
here
to.
With us for
he
a while
used to work
ago?
With us a long time ago. We remember him.
Yeah, but
we'll
I quit.
We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Dan Cole, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And it's a good thing this is a computer show because our computer froze.
Yeah, let's go ahead. First of all, Nick, can you make sure the mic's off before you insult me next time? And you know what? You can blame it on me all day long, but it's the computer that froze.
I don't doubt it.
Yeah.
Hey. I don't doubt it one but bit. I know what so? Operating system runs these computers.
But did that fluster you? No, you moved
you
right
moved
on.
You moved right on. It was very smooth. But it was apparently
once, once I shoot him a couple times.
Yeah, he's like, I'm like, what?
Yeah, right. Yeah, well, it was the hand signal that I'm looking at. It's like, was he drying his nail? I don't know what that was.
Well, you know, you just never can trust computers. I want to get back into the days of cart decks.
Sure you do.
Seriously.
Wouldn't you rather be spinning albums?
Yeah.
I remember some of the nasty problems we had with carts at some of the old stations.
Oh, they were great, especially when they got eaten up and you had to clean
the
heads.
And now in the studios, it's the Paul Whiteman band.
Yeah, but it didn't pick up the tone and wouldn't fire to the next one.
Right.
Yep.
And you're sitting there pulling it out, shoving it back in.
Yeah, well, computers are supposed to help everything, but the news system that we use here, every now and then, if some big thing comes through, it'll freeze, and you just have to kind of make things up, and that's, you know.
Well, you were brilliant. I said you were smooth. It was not an insult. It was a
compliment.
Smooth
like butter.
But like butter. All right, it's 34 minutes after the hour, and eventually you're going to be listening to Sound Bites. Before we get back to the phones, now that we've shooed Rob out of the room, he's back again now. He just wanted to know what I was saying about him. The Consumer Complaints Board in Denmark claims to have evidence of an original design defect in the iBook G4 that has been hotly denied by Apple. Many iBook G4 customers complain that after about 1 year's use, the laptop acquired the nasty habit of powering down and greeting the users with a blank screen and a loud, whirring fan on startup. I didn't even know Macs had fans. Laptop dissector soon figured a logic board failure for the problem. Creative has decided to has something called the iSleek method to fix the problem. I don't know what that means. They use a C-clamp on their little laptop, which squeezes the logic board down, and they put in some cardboard shims to make it reboot. Apple has rejected attempts to have the fault repaired or returned on the grounds there is no question of a design fault. But now the Danes have something to say about that, and they hope to squeeze some cash out of Apple. After regular complaints, the National Consumer Agency in Denmark sent a suspect iMac G4 to Delta, an independent electronics laboratory, to have it examined. The investigation showed solder joints between two components had broken, so a current could no longer pass between them. The breakage was found to occur because the joints loosen slightly every time the computer is turned on or off. It's a little bit like a person dying a little bit every time he breathes because the cells break down, said the CB lawyer, Frederick Vane. In the same way, the computer dies a little every time you turn it on and off. The board now wants Apple to acknowledge the alleged design flaw outside of Denmark's borders. Apple International has begun to settle a number of cases in Denmark on the basis of the investigation. So I don't believe any of that has hit our shores yet.
Not exactly, but Apple already has a repair extension for iBooks out of warranty to replace the logic board for power and video problems.
There you go. Then it's done. What now, there's the iBook.
Yeah, the Apple's changed the names of their computers. The iBook is the older white laptops,
right,
and the MacBook is the current model, Intel-based. The iBook were PowerPC-based. When they moved to the Intel processor, they changed the names of their models.
To MacBook.
Right, MacBook at the consumer level and MacBook Pro at the professional level.
So the more powerful one is the MacBook Pro,
right,
which makes sense.
Yep.
And then the next level down is the MacBook.
MacBook,
but and you can't buy the iMac,
The iBook,
the
right.
iBook anymore.
Right.
Okay, you really, seriously, get better names somewhere.
Well, a lot of people have been complaining about this, about it doesn't roll off the tongue as well.
Right.
But the interesting thing is that for the longest time, for many, many years, none of Apple's products had Mac in the name. There was the PowerBook and the iBook. It's not a Mac. So now they've renamed all of their, they had the iMac.
Right.
All. So now they've got the iMac, the Mac Pro, the MacBook, and the MacBook Pro, and then the Mac Mini. So all of their products have the word Mac in the name.
Is it me, or is it?
It's probably you.
Probably. But no, I mean, Steve.
Well, it's a little easier to remember than, you know, the HP D2214MP64.
Well, yes. No. That's not what I'm getting to. What I was going to say was, it seemed like back a long time ago, it seemed like every other month he was always coming out with new models.
Well, that was
once the Mac came out with the iPod, seems like the whole company's focus has gone that way, and you don't see six new models of this coming out this month. Next month they got six others of this.
That's actually one of the things Jobs fixed. When he came back to Apple in 97, I think it was, 98, the iMac was the first product under his new reign as the iCEO. So that's where the iBook came from, and the iMac, they had that prefix for a while.
Oh, wait, did you see the cool thing on Google now?
Which?
If you open up Google, you normally get just the big word Google and then almost nothing else on the page but a place you can do stuff.
Type it in search.
Oh, they've got iGoogle now, yeah.
If you look in the upper right-hand corner, there's iGoogle, which is your personalized Google page where you can put the date and the time and a calendar, yep, and all the weather and whatever you want, all kinds of stuff.
And that's been hacked a couple of times, so that's a different problem.
Right,
but, going back, when Jobs came back to Apple, the predecessor, was it Spindler or Scully?
Spindler.
No, Emilio.
Oh, Emilio,
yeah. They were branching out into different markets. They had the retail market, the consumer market, the education market, the pro market. So they were selling computers at like Sears and at Computer City and at Best Buy and in regular computer stores. And they had different model numbers depending on the channel it was in.
Right.
So the Quadra 605 in the business channel was the same as the LC475 in the education channel. It made our job as service providers, you know, even worse, because now there's hundreds of different models numbers that are almost identical computers on the inside.
Right.
That's one of the first things Jobs did when he came in, is he basically killed all of these other projects and broke it down into four models: consumer and pro, desktop and laptop.
Which is really, when you get right down to it, what people want to look at anyway.
Yeah, too many options.
He should be a politician. He did everything except answer my question.
Yeah, I know.
Well, no, they cut down too many models.
Right.
Initially.
All right, we're
going
to take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Dan Cole, me, Nick Francesco, and you at 39 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dan Cole.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. We're going to skip the news. We'll get to that later. And we'll get right to the phones. Our next caller is Gary from Greece. Welcome, Gary. What's your question?
Yes, I got a problem with Windows Genuine Advantage.
Yes, you do.
Oh, yes, I do. It won't let me reactivate Windows. She just keeps telling me that there's no connectivity.
Well, no connectivity means there's an internet problem.
Yeah.
Can you get onto web pages?
Yes, I can.
But so, you're getting that little star down in the lower right-hand corner that says the Windows Genuine Advantage?
Right, and I go through all
right, here's
well, it could be that Microsoft server is overwhelmed.
That's been one of the issues we're worried about. Nope. Tell you the easiest way to get rid of it is you download Hijack This.
Okay.
You run Hijack This, and in there, there's going to be a line for the Genuine.
You remove it?
And that's all you do is the Windows Genuine Advantage will be listed there. You check it, remove it, reboot. You'll never see it again.
Okay, good. All right.
Okay. Ta-da!
Of course, that's illegal, and you've now just told everybody how to
do that. It's very legal.
No,
what
it's not legal.
Yeah.
Well, Microsoft can stop sending you more updates because you have to be Genuine Advantage certified to get updates.
Here's what happened. Was Microsoft, it was, what was it, last October? Over 750,000 users got into a database that shouldn't have been.
Of pirate serials, and so they wouldn't.
Yes, and everything else. So a lot of, as long as you've got a legitimate license on the side of your machine,
right,
and you run that, because it's all...
As long as you have a legitimate license.
That's the key. You can remove it, and it will not affect your machine. Now, if you don't,
right,
and you've got a hijacked one, I didn't tell you what it does there.
Yeah, right.
So you think it's one, but it could be something else, and it can mess things up.
Right. All right. Okay, Our next caller is Jeff from Avon, New York. Welcome, Jeff.
Yes, good morning. I have a quick question. My wife and I use OpenOffice exclusively. My wife and I have used OpenOffice exclusively, but we have made this large 100-page document that we want to be able to print, and we have to repaginate it. And we only figured out how to do it manually. Do you know of any software that will do it automatically for us?
How do you mean repaginate?
Well, we want to put four panels on an 8.5x11 sheet.
Oh, you want to create a signature proof.
Right. And do you know of any software that will do that automatically, or are we going to have to do it manually?
Well, there are layout programs that do it.
Yeah.
InCopy does it. Well, InDesign does it.
Yeah. I knew I'd have to go to a higher end software to do it automatically. But is there anything on the lower end on the OpenOffice end of it?
We'll put the word out to our Linux community, and someone probably will have written one by the end of the show if there isn't already.
Right. The easiest thing, of course, is that you can just go to save it as a Word document, and then use one of those programs to do it. But
yeah.
You're right. I don't know of a way to do that off the top of my head, but we will find out.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Appreciate it.
Yep-er. All right. Our next caller is Sammy from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Sammy. What's your question?
Hi, guys. Great show. Listen to you all the time.
Thank you.
Actually, I have a comment about Vista versus Linux. A lot of people are running out and they're purchasing these new machines with Linux or with Vista, I mean.
Right.
Big no-no. I don't know why people are doing this. People are still experiencing problems with XP.
Well, and most of the issues are that's all the stores are selling now is Vista. You have to look really hard to find an XP machine.
Yeah, but, well, you could also go through, if you can go through like iPower.com or, sites that will, build your own specs and just tell them, you want XP on it. Or
Dell is the first mainstream company that has now gone back to offering XP and also offering Ubuntu.
Right, they're offering Ubuntu Linux.
Yeah, which is what I run. I run, my main machine, I run XP, plus I run Ubuntu, I run DSL embedded, and I even live boot Nopix off it.
There you go.
Which is, it's a great variation for surfing, and it's safe, secure.
Right. A lot of people right now are saying that both Apple and the Linux community have a huge opportunity here. Because if you're buying Vista, it's completely different from everything you've had before. You have to relearn a whole new way to do things.
Right.
And so that being the case, if you're going to have to learn a whole new way to do things anyway, why not move to a Mac or move to Linux and learn something new that's also more secure?
And at the same time, a lot of your callers who might be listening right now, they could take that machine that they're running right now and just, you know, resize their hard disk. Most distros out right now, a lot of the new ones, which could be found on distrowatch.net or .com,
right.
Are NTFS friendly.
Yep.
And very easily you can install them. You don't have to worry about grub and you know, your mess.
Right, it all does it for you.
Yeah, it all does it for you.
I completely agree. We got to take a break, Sammy. Thank you very much. We'll be back in just a couple minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Dan Cole, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you. It's 49 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dan Cole.
And at 54 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbites. All right, kiddies.
Well, actually,
oh, wait a minute. Right, yep, right.
Got a couple of things. For the caller looking how to print booklets, they're also called, and signature proofs in Open Office, I posted a link to the Open Office forums where they're talking about many different ways to do it. Apparently, there's a booklet option in one of the print settings somewhere.
There you go, Jeff. It's actually apparently built into OpenOffice.
You just
Office.
Have to know what the name is. We call them right. signature proofs because that's the old printing term,
right.
And the Kodak signature printer did that. And also for the earlier caller that was having problems with the Windows Genuine Advantage, I found the Microsoft TechNote article on how to correctly overcome the problem.
There you go.
The Microsoft way. I don't know if that's the correct way or not, but the Microsoft approved way of overcoming the Genuine Advantage not activating.
Well, see, that's the thing, though. With my way,
it never
they can either
you again.
Fix it or
this
the
is the guy, but this is the
no,
guy
no,
who
no,
last
no, no, no,
week.
No, wait a minute. This is where I love it. And this is going into, matter of fact, my story, you know, the story hour.
Yeah.
All right. Here's the thing. You do it that way. If you're legit, you got no worries. If you mess it up, because it's illegal, it's coming to me. And then I'm going to sit there and say, all right, where's your original disc?
Right.
Unless you can put
But you're the guy who last week said we never tell users to run hijack this, ever.
For this, they can.
Well, see, hijack this gives you so much information, you have no idea what it's talking about.
Exactly.
It's just a very dangerous tool.
It really is. All right, kitty, sit back, get your footy jammies on, grab your cup of hot cocoa. We know Uncle Dave's already awake because his heart is beating, and it's time for Uncle Dave's Story Hour. Uncle Dave?
Again, two things. This is, again, going back to this genuine, that was the only time, and like I say, it's one thing. Just sit there, and you know, we've been discussing this, and we get into the whole thing about the music.
Right.
It's all illegal. If you don't pay for it, it's illegal.
Yeah, if you did not create it, you cannot copy it.
And I don't care whether it's music, software, or anything else. If you're stealing it, and I get a number of customers, well, I want to put this on this machine. All right, well, where's the service tag? Well, I wrote it on this disc, and it's a burned CD.
Right.
Wait a minute. If you don't have the original, I am not putting it on the machine. It's illegal. And, you know, if I get caught doing this,
right,
my butt's going to jail.
Right.
I'm sorry.
But here's the reality. If you want to do something illegal, knock yourself out. If you try to make me do something illegal for you, do not insult me.
Yeah.
Do not insult me.
And I get folks from time to time, I don't see, they'll bring it in and say, well, install this. Where's the original? Well, this is my copy of it. Is this on another machine? Yeah. Well, then I can't put it on this one. Why not?
Well, because most of the software now won't run on multiple machines.
Oh, this is a big ripoff. I got to pay double for that software?
Yeah.
Yes, and hello, bottom line, what happens is us folks that do buy stuff legally are paying a higher price.
You remember back
because
in the olden days? Yeah, back in the olden days.
And
Lotus, don't assume
that I'm a thief.
Yeah.
If you want to be a thief, that's your business. Don't assume I'm one, and don't ask me to abet what you're doing.
Yeah. Lotus put out this public notice to the community 20 years ago. 123 cost $500, and everyone was complaining how much it cost. And Lotus said, well, our studies have shown that for every legal copy we sell, there's 4 illegal copies in the marketplace. So it really only costs $100, and that's fine.
Yep.
Yeah.
But yeah, you are, and you always have been legally obligated to buy a program for every computer you put it on.
Right.
Now, and some companies understand multiple licenses. Microsoft has their really nice student and teacher version of Office.
Right.
The regular version of Office is $400. If you're a student or teacher, it's $150 for three licenses in your house.
Right.
So a lot of companies understand that, and they know that. We see that a lot in the design software that's big on the Mac side, Quark and PageMaker and InDesign and Photoshop. You're allowed to put it on your desktop and your laptop at the same time, as long as it's only running on one of them. Because they know a lot of people have a desktop and a laptop.
But I'm trying to get at, though, is it's because of all this illegal and pirated software
raising prices.
That us, as users and, responsible users, are paying the higher price.
Right. Right.
Well, I get a lot of people, your hard drive has died. Well, can you recover my programs for me? Usually not. Data can be recovered, but programs can. Well, just reinstall it from your disks. Oh, I don't have the disks anymore. Sorry.
Yeah.
Anymore, right.
Anymore, yeah.
All right, kids, that's it. We're going to put Uncle Dave back on the shelf for another week. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. We're going to set him down. We're just going to give him his tranquilizer. Put away your footy jammies. Rinse out your hot cocoa mugs. We're kind of done with him. We're back. We're
going to
take
drip.
A quick break. The lovely Rob Linton has returned, and he will be bringing you all the news and weather and sports and all. He'll be doing some dancing for you. It'll be lovely. I wish you could see that. The cameras aren't up yet, but luckily for you. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Dan Cole, Rob Linton, and me, Nick Francesco. It is 59 minutes after the hour. And you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites only and exclusively on 1180 WHAM.
Thousand-watt News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000-watt 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dan Cole.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Sound Bites. Now, before we get back to the phones, we have several people on hold. But before we get back to the phones, we had an interesting news item that directly relates to our poll this week. As you know, every week we do a poll at our website at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. And the poll last week was about whether you'd rather rent music from iTunes than buy it. And 241 of you voted, making it number 246 on the all-time hit list. And overwhelmingly, 51% of you said, what are you on, crack? 25% said, I'd rather rip CDs I buy. 17% I'd rather steal music over the internet. At least they were honest. 5% said iTunes discriminates against Linux. And only 3 of you said the very thing I've been hoping for. This week's poll has to do with a news item that came out. Researchers from security vendor Sophos say a new worm targeting removable drives is an example of a potential security threat for businesses. The silly FD-AA worm searches for removable drives, such as floppy disks and USB memory sticks, also known as thumb drives, and creates a hidden file called autorun.inf, so that a copy of the worm runs the next time the device is connected to a computer running Windows. In addition, it changes the title of Internet Explorer Windows to say that the computer has been hacked by one byte. Graham Cluley, good name for the senior technology consultant at Sophos, said the worm has not been widely distributed and the researchers were warning the public because of the potential danger. It would be easy, he continued, to add to the worm the ability to transmit through other routes, such as email or instant messaging. It's interesting to see hackers trying different techniques in their attempt to break into people's computers. This type of attack is perhaps understandable, as so many businesses these days do have email gateway protection in place. They can scan files coming into their company via email attachments, but can't check the files coming in attached to the keychain in people's pockets. Companies wanted to consider installing software that locks down and controls access to external drives such as USB sticks. Software Sophos officials recommend companies automatically update their corporate virus protection and defend their users with a consolidated solution to defend against the threats of viruses, spyware, hackers, and spam. The threat of this particular worm is limited at the moment because if your desktop antivirus software is up to date, you should be fine. But that's this week's question. Do you use a USB drive? And the choices, of course, are yes, no, and what? So far.
You know one thing, though? That
so far, we've got 90 people who voted. 81% of you own a USB drive. 16% don't, and 3% don't even know what one is.
I use one, but I've got one, and I guess it must be very rare. It's got a lock on it that I can control.
Most of them do not.
Most of them don't.
Yeah, most of them don't.
I just got a new 1 gig model that's physically smaller than my old 256 model.
Right, they're getting small, but that doesn't have a lock on it.
Doesn't have a lock on
it.
No, but it does have blinky lights. When I bought it, he didn't think it had blinky lights on it.
But it does.
No, but it does. Yeah. Well, what's interesting too is there's a similar article to that came out a week or so ago, saying that businesses should ban iPods because iPods are portable storage devices. They can be used as a flash drive, and the same problem can occur. With viruses attacking the iPod,
right.
And with people stealing corporate secrets on their iPod, so
right.
The media spin is interesting. They're saying, "Oh, ban iPods." Well, no, it's any portable media storage device.
Right. The reality is that you'll check a guy's briefcase when they come out of a secure place, and you'll look to see that they don't have any CDs or floppy disks. You may even look for those things, but nobody thinks to check the iPod on the guy's belt.
I have trouble getting into some high security installations to service their computers. I got to inventory my bag of tools.
Right.
And most everything in my bag of tools is wires and cutters and pliers.
It's prescribed by those people.
Right, and then disks and CDs and oh, you can't bring any of that in. Oh, well, I need those to do my job.
Yeah, it's very hard to do my job without them.
A lot of places now you have to check your cell phone if you have a cell phone with a camera in it.
I have my one of my minions, Tom, went to a conference, and he brought me back a 60 meg, it's only 60 meg, USB drive that looks like a bracelet. Mm-hmm. It looks like one of those rubber, Live Strong or whatever bracelets. And I could wear that pretty much anywhere, and people would just look at it and say, "Oh, it's one of those bracelets."
Yep.
Disguising it more and more.
Yep. Well, it just makes it easy to carry. It's a wear.
There's another one that I saw that it looks like a it's like a medallion, and it's maybe an inch and a quarter by an inch and a quarter, and it was an 8 gig USB drive. Mm-hmm. But to look at it, it looked like and hanging on a keychain.
Right.
But it looks like a medallion that you would have. On a fancy, it was a gift or something.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and it looks real fancy, and it even had a nice logo on it. You wouldn't suspect it.
Yep. It used to be, and I can't tell you the number of people I see walking around with thumb drives hanging from their necks.
Yep.
Used to be, I'm Italian, so I used to see a bunch of people with the cornu hanging down.
I remember that.
But now it's not that. Now it's the new geek jewelry. It's the little thing there. So, all right, give us a vote. Vote at the poll at soundbites.org. When you're done voting, take a look underneath it. You'll see a yellow box. If you click on Give Us Your Opinion, that takes you to my website, asknick.com.
That's asknick.com.
Shut up!
Where you can enter an opinion, because I know that just clicking a little button isn't enough for you folks. 8 people have put their opinions on there already. And while you're there, check out our forums. Check out my newsletter. It's only $15 a year and well worth it. I give you all kinds of tips and tricks and websites and rant and rave once in a while. It's all pretty good. So there you have it. And let's go back to the phones now. Our next caller is Dave from Akron. Welcome, Dave. Is this Akron, New York or Akron, Ohio?
Akron, New York.
Well, that's good. At least you're not that long distance.
How you doing today?
Peachy, how are you?
Too bad. Say, I'd like to hear a little discussion about the differences between C# and Visual Basic and, things to look out for somebody who's just trying to start out, runtimes and compilers and all these kind of things.
Well,
very confusing.
Well, here's this is a fairly high end discussion. But
was he sitting in the break room when we were talking about?
Yeah, I think he might have been.
Yeah.
Here's the big difference. Really, these days, in terms of your ability to do things with them, there's almost no difference. Both of them are Microsoft products. C# is the next generation of C. Visual Basic is the next generation of Basic. Both of them are programming languages. Both of them are available in the Microsoft .NET framework. And they pretty much let you do the same thing. The real difference is minimal. You certainly have a runtime with Visual Basic, but that comes with Windows anyway. So it really becomes what you're more comfortable with. In the long run, I believe you can compile down C# to a smaller executable than you can Visual Basic. But it, you know, if you're writing utilities for your own use, it doesn't really matter which. If you're writing an operating system, I'd stick with C#. But if you're just writing a utility, it truly doesn't matter. You can do pretty much the same set of stuff. I'm not a, you know, I'm a PHP programmer. I program in Forth, but I don't use either Visual Basic. I started playing with Gambus, but I haven't done much with Visual Basic or C# yet.
Well, would you say that Visual Basic would be better for a beginner?
I don't know that. Yes, I would. Yeah, I would say Visual Basic is certainly better for a beginner, but neither one of them are real beginner languages anymore. Yeah.
What could be a beginner language? None of them, probably.
None of them, likely. No. I mean, you're a little closer, I suspect, with Visual Basic, but really, you know, nowadays, if you're going to do anything.
Back in the day, it used to be Pascal.
It used to be basic.
Well, you start with basic. Yeah, beginner's all-purpose symbolic instructional code.
But, but Microsoft has turned Visual Basic into more of a professional thing, and you have events and you program events. You don't really write straight code so much anymore.
And for the other folks that don't know what the heck we're talking about, basically, you folks know that you put in a program, it loads, it runs.
Someone had to write that program ahead of time.
That program, if you were to look behind the screen, if you could see behind the screen, all you would see are lines and lines and pages of code that tells it that if you click on this button, do this.
Did I read that Vista's 100 million lines of code?
Yeah, you probably did.
Yeah.
I mean, and for us folks, the geeks here, that we've all three of us here have done quite a bit of coding in our days. That, you know, the hours that you can spend, and this is what we were talking about before in the break room before the show, was the different lines and code and programming, how people get burned out. They usually start as programmers and then move on to something else because of the hours and hours of intensity that you can spend because your whole world is just focused on that screen and getting this procedure or that to run. So, and I mean, for you as an end user, it's just, I'm able to be able to click on this, and it takes me here.
It sounds like me when I started with Forth like 20 years ago.
There we go, Forth.
Yeah.
But is Forth still viable and still healthy? And
sure, there's a bunch of different Forths out there. If you go to forth.org, part of the way down, the www.forth.org, actually, you have to put in that part, I think. Uh-huh. If you go there and you head down the page, you'll find a link that says Forth Compilers.
I see.
And under Forth Software is the title of the section, and there's a thing on Forth Compilers. There are a bunch of free ones, as well as a bunch you can pay for. There's some for Windows, for Unix, for the Mac, for Linux. There's stuff for everything, so...
You can easily find a bunch of them out there.
If you're still interested in using Forth, there are a bunch of Forths out there. And for either free or just a little bit of money, you can actually do some stuff, some great stuff. Win32 Forth and LMI Win Forth and DLL Forth Win32. And, you know, for all those are all for Windows.
What was the big thing? The Space Shuttle ARM is programmed in Forth.
The Space Shuttle ARM. I actually knew the guy who had done it. And he was telling me that, you know, luckily he wasn't supposed to have used Forth, but they didn't have time to write it in anything high level. So he cobbled it all together in Forth. And it's a good thing he did because there was one point where the Space Shuttle was supposed to release some sort of satellite and it was oriented 180 degrees out of phase. So he linked up to the satellite, to the ARM, reprogrammed it so that all its commands were now 180 degrees out of phase, and it properly released the satellite, which otherwise it would have been a scrubbed mission.
How do they get involved with C Sharp and Visual Basic as, you know, two offerings from Microsoft? How did that come to be?
Well, originally Visual Basic was designed for the lower end. Mm-hmm. I want to write a little utility or just play around or whatever. And C Sharp was, this is what we're going to write the next version of Windows in. But because .NET is their overarching framework, both of them can do .NET, and therefore both of them became fairly large in terms of their abilities. Okie doke.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you, Dave. Go back to fourth. You'll be happier than a pig in mud. Our next caller is not going to go on now because we're going to take a quick break. After that, we have a bunch of callers still on the line. So if you're on the line, please stay on the line. If you're not on the line, I have no idea why not. You should be. We're going to come right back with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Dan Cole, me, Nick Francesco, and you at 20 minutes after the hour at Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dan Cole.
At 24 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. Well, interesting thing has come about with Vista. Some of Microsoft's most important customers are not happy with the battery life offered by notebooks running Windows Vista. It's a little scary, says John Wozniak, a distinguished technologist in Hewlett-Packard's notebook engineering department, referring to the work HP needed to do on making Windows Vista more suitable for notebooks. Vista, while touted as having improved power management capabilities that would make it easier for users to extend battery life, well, there are reports that it's not living up to that promise. The main culprit appears to be the Aero Glass interface, which is that spiffy new interface that makes Vista more pleasing to the eye with transparent windows and animated transitions when moving from one application to another. When Aero is turned off, battery life is equal to or better than Windows XP systems, but with it turned on, battery life suffers compared with Windows XP. And let's face it, without Aero Glass, you've just got XP, so why would you pay for the upgrade and not use Aero Glass? Microsoft has made some important changes in Vista that do improve some aspects of battery life, such as smarter hibernation modes that override applications that want to keep running, simpler options for choosing a power management setting. But laptop users who spend extra money on powerful laptops to handle the graphics requirements of Vista and the Aero interface are forced to run the aesthetic equivalent of Vista Basic, which is the low-cost version of Vista without Aero Glass, if they care about battery life. Battery life problems continue to rankle notebook users. When a consumer has to buy an extended battery to get what they used to get out of a standard battery, something is really wrong. And clearly, there's something that Microsoft is doing incorrectly because I'm running Ubuntu, and even when I turn on Compiz with all the jiggly windows and making it rotate in a cube and all that other stuff, I still get over 2 hours of battery life on this thing. But when I'm running Aero Glass, I'm lucky if I get an hour. I'm lucky. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, that was one of the things about the earlier story about the Apple iBook battery performance issues is that they were able to change in software how the battery is utilized by what processes in the computer, and that's how they got longer battery life out of it.
Right.
There's just too much overhead, you know, to maintain that it's just not worth it.
Right, right. And running those higher end graphics cards just simply takes more juice. What are you going to do?
Yeah, it's price of poker.
But I've said this before. You know, we keep talking about battery life, and that always brings me back to the iPhone and the report. Of course, we haven't seen an iPhone yet. But reports are that battery life is horrible in them. And I hope that's true. It's true is because if Jobs gets the idea that the reason iPhones don't sell is because of the battery life, he'll put a team of people on the battery that'll give us a battery that lasts a month.
Yep. Yeah.
And I don't doubt that. You know? So it is my fervent and true hope that the battery life in the iPhone sucks. And it's only because in the long run it'll help us all.
You can almost bank on it.
I hope it's true.
Yeah.
Our next caller is Rich from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Rich. What's your question?
Hi, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my phone call.
Sure.
I have a trouble with my computer. It started about 2 weeks ago. Is that when I turn it on, it just sets the hourglass and it doesn't bring it up so I can use it. It locks up.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have to turn the power off and do it again. It takes as much time as six times to do it. I have started in safe mode, and I've done my adware, my spy bot, and all that, and I can't find out what's causing it.
So now, does it start up correctly in safe mode?
In safe mode, it comes up in safe mode, but not when I do it regular.
All right, let's first find out what operating system and how much memory.
Windows XP,
mm-hmm.
And I have, 500 megabyte?
Okay, 512.
Right, and it used to work fine.
What changed when this started to act up? Had you done any Windows updates or?
Oh yeah, I've done. I get the notices for Windows updates, so I have done those.
But what happened just before?
What updates?
What changed just before this started happening?
Just the Windows updates.
All right.
They said what was critical is what I downloaded.
Yeah, so one of those updates must have corrupted.
I'm
something.
Wondering if again in this when I hate to harp on it, and I know some of the folks in the forums have been slamming me, but. About it, but what do you have? Internet Explorer 7.0?
No, Internet Express, Outlook Express is what I have, and I use Frontier.
Yeah, but no, I mean, are you when it downloaded?
What's your web browser?
Oh, Outlook is all I.
Outlook is email, not
right,
web.
I use Frontier.
Frontier's an internet service, not a web browser.
When you start up your web browser, do you click on a big blue E?
Yeah.
You are using Internet Explorer, probably version 7, because that comes in automatically.
Yeah.
Okay.
Version 7 is bad and causes problems.
Yeah, it's been known to cause a number of issues. Not on all machines, so you folks out there in the forums that sit there and say, I'm running it fine, good for you. It's only certain hardware packages and combinations that it causes issues, and it's no biggie to uninstall it. If you go into,
you can
get into safe mode, go into there. Have it uninstall Internet Explorer 7.0, reboot, see if that corrects it. If it does, you win. If not, you can always put it back.
The next time the Windows update pops up, you can turn off Internet Explorer 7 and tell you about that one again.
Right.
Okay.
So if that fixes your problem, that's
good. So give that a try and let us know.
Okay. And I don't need to get a new computer because I was thinking of going to an Apple because I was getting kind of upset with this.
An Apple is a great machine. If you buy a Mac, you won't regret it. But try this first. Save yourself a little money.
Yeah. The computer's only about 7 years old, but...
Only about 7 years old?
That's very, very, very old for a computer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they talk about dogs years is about 7 to 1. Computers are about 10 or 20 to 1.
Yeah, you've got a computer that's ready for the home.
Ready for the home.
Yeah, so if you're looking to upgrade, certainly a Mac would be an excellent choice.
When I have trouble with Word documents that I have, and I use Microsoft Office on converting them.
So, well, you could either buy Microsoft Office for the Mac, or you could use any of a number of other programs.
OpenOffice or NeoOffice, both work great on the Mac. They're both free.
Or Apple's own AppleWorks. AppleWorks
works great, and that's only $80. And all of those will convert, will read and write Word documents.
Okay, thank you very much for your help, gentlemen.
Sure. Mm-hmm. I use NeoOffice on my Mac Mini,
and
although it's only a Mac Mini and therefore not tremendously fast,
mm-hmm.
It runs great.
Yeah. See, that's one thing that irks me a little bit now and then. People say, well, how can I open my Word files? Well, get Word. But that has nothing to do with Mac or Windows. That has to do with what kind of documents you're using.
Right.
If you give a Word file to a PC user that only has WordPerfect, they can't open it either.
Right.
It's Word. It's not Windows.
Right. That's why I save most of my documents as RTF files.
Yeah, anyone can open an RTF.
Right. All right, our next caller is Jane from Wyoming, New York, I'm assuming.
Yep, that's me.
Okay.
Wyoming. How are you?
When's the Apple Lumpkin Festival?
The end of September.
End of September, yeah. We go down there every year.
Coming up.
Yep.
Yeah, but you keep coming back.
Keep him. Keep him, Jane.
Keep him next time he comes down.
You see him? You know, just hide him in some corner.
What's your question?
Well, we live where there is no cable, and we're too far away for DSL. So I'm wondering what you guys think of WildBlue. It's like satellite.
Right.
Right. There's two options for people in your situation. One is satellite TV or satellite internet, which is common for people that have satellite TV also. Haven't heard of WildBlue. HughesNet has been the big satellite internet service for a while. And then there's also cellular internet that both Verizon and Singular are bringing online. Right now, Verizon's is faster. It's faster than dial-up, but slower than a typical cable or DSL broadband.
And the thing you need to know about satellite is that unless you're paying a ludicrous amount of money, It's satellite down to you, but it's phone line from you out to the real world, which generally is not really a problem because you'll send out a packet saying, for example, give me that web page. Well, that doesn't take any time at all. So sending that out over a phone line is not a big deal. And then the response comes to you via satellite fast. Or you'll say, well, give me my email. And that's not a big packet. So it goes out pretty quick over the phone line. And then your email comes to you via satellite fast. So you need to know that for a lot of them, when you're using satellite, you're also tying up your phone.
But not all of them, some of them. But and it looks like Wild Blue's got some discount packages running now for $60 a month. Is the typical cost of satellite internet. They've got one. Their promotion is now $50 a month.
So that's
the it's also more expensive than cable or DSL. But sometimes that's your only choice when you're too far away.
Right, it's Hobson's choice. So go for it. Yeah, most of them are awfully good, and I haven't seen any bad stuff. I was looking around earlier in the show when I saw your thing there, and I didn't see anything really bad being said about Wild Blue.
Well, see if they'll let you try it out for a few months if you've already got Dish.
Mm-hmm.
You know, see if they...
No, we don't have Dish.
Yeah.
So, I guess you have to put their own special dish up.
Right, they would anyway.
Even if you have a satellite TV dish, the satellite internet is a different dish, but usually it's the smaller 18-inch dishes. Yeah. It's not the big 6-foot dishes that they used to be. One of the issues used to be you had to have a dedicated PC to act as the router for the satellite before you put it into your own PC. And they've gotten away from that now by having their own small little router boxes now, so you can plug a standard PC into it, just like the cable routers and DSL routers.
And I say go for it.
It looks like they have three different packages, depending on how fast you want to download, 512K, 1 meg, or 1.5 meg downloads. So, yeah, it looks like a pretty good company.
So if I were to send, like if I wanted to send pictures, it would still take as long.
Sending pictures would take as long. Yes, absolutely. Yes.
Well, not necessarily. The upload speed is about the same as DSL and cable. Their value pack, which is the $50 a month, is 512K down and 128K up. And DSL and cable are both 128K up.
No, 384K, isn't it?
Are they up? Well, that's the premium package, I think, on Roadrunner.
I don't know. I think it's 384K.
It might be 256K.
Even so, 128K is still at way over twice as fast as you're getting.
With dial-up modem, yeah.
Right.
Thanks a lot.
All right. There you go. Good luck.
Try it out and let us know what you think because, you know, we recommend this to so many folks, but if they take the time to get back to us and let us know, it'd be great.
All right. Please let us know. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Dan Cole, me, Nick Francesco, and you at 36 minutes after the hour at Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dan Cole.
And at 40 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbite. Steve did find that Wild Blue indeed uses satellite up as well as satellite down.
It's a 26-inch dish with two-way satellite.
Right.
And
so
that's
you
why
won't. So for Jane, you will not be using your phone line, and it will be a faster upload. Actually, I figured that when you told me it was minimum 128 megabits per second up.
Kilo.
It couldn't be a kilobits per second up. It couldn't possibly have been... the phone line.
Yeah.
All right, before we get back to the phones, Microsoft. It's Microsoft's monthly visitor. The DNS patch Tuesday is coming out. Microsoft has confirmed that a patch for the already exploited DNS server bug in Windows will be among the 7 updates scheduled to release Tuesday. In a posting on the Microsoft Security Response Center blog, program manager Christopher Budd vouched for the patch. The listing of updates slated for Tuesday does include the update we've been working on, Budd said. His comments were posted after Microsoft announced it would be releasing 7 updates this coming Tuesday. As recently as a week ago, Budd had said that while his group was making progress on a fix for the DNS vulnerability, he stopped short of guaranteeing a May 8th delivery. The bug, which has been out for quite a while and was first acknowledged by Microsoft 3 weeks ago, has been exploited by attackers who have used it to... assault Windows 2000 servers and Windows Server 2003 systems. Outside searchers predicted then that Microsoft would issue an out-of-cycle fix for the flaw, but of course, they didn't. So those of you who are using Microsoft 2000 server or Microsoft Server 2003 have been vulnerable to this for at least a month, but luckily you'll be fixed theoretically on Tuesday. So make sure you've got those updates and patches coming to you. Our next caller is Argyle from Pittsburgh. Welcome.
Howdy, guys. How you doing?
Good. Hey. How are you?
Good, good, good. Look, I got an iTunes question, and I think I know how to do it, but I need you guys' opinions. I'm going to be hitting the road here later on this summer. I'm going to be doing about 6 or 7 months worth of biking, hiking, camping, and everything.
Nice.
I'm taking with me a Nano because I like the fact that it's solid state and I don't have to worry about a lot of, you know, hitting it against a rock or anything like that.
Right. And up to a 24-hour battery life is nice.
Yeah, and it's going to feed the sound system in the vehicle as well. I'm taking a MacBook with me, which has got a 60-gig drive on it. And I'm going to take a FireWire drive with me, a 250-gig FireWire drive, to hold the big music library and the digital photos that I take and everything else. The question is, how do I move an iTunes library between the MacBook, the FireWire, and the Nano?
In the iTunes preferences, under advanced, there is a setting to change the location of your iTunes library.
Okay.
And you point it to the external drive, and then it moves all your files to there.
Yeah, but Steve, I'm going to also want to use the MacBook without the FireWire drive.
Ah, so, well, okay.
You follow what I'm saying?
Yeah, the way iTunes will work it is there's another checkbox in iTunes to copy music to your library.
Uh-huh.
If you uncheck that, it leaves the music where it is. So you can, in essence, have multiple libraries, music that's on your internal drive, music that's on your external drive.
Okay,
and it will use whatever one is accessible at that time.
And it'll use whatever one is accessible at that time.
Right. So if you click on a song that's on the external drive, it just won't play.
Okay. So then I will have a music library on the MacBook and a music library on the FireWire drive.
Basically, yeah.
How do I then move music in between the FireWire drive and the MacBook?
You don't.
Well, I'm going to want to take music off the FireWire drive and put it on the MacBook.
Then just drag the file. Just drag the file from one drive to the other and then put it into iTunes.
Is that, you're talking about dragging the whole library?
No, whatever song you want to move.
Okay, so I'll be able to just move them back and forth by clicking and dragging in between the two.
Right.
But I can keep separate libraries on both the FireWire drive, the MacBook, and then I can use the MacBook to shuttle to the Nano.
And then you sync that to the Nano, yeah. And that's getting to be common with laptops that typically have a smaller hard drive size than desktops.
Right.
So a lot of people will put all of their music on a big desktop and then put nothing on their laptop and save the laptop for other uses.
That's almost what I've been doing, but this is going to get down to a situation where I need to have the music on the laptop, some of the files on the laptop as well.
Yeah.
And I want to be able to trash those at some time and import other ones.
Yep. It shouldn't be a problem.
Okay. Good. That's it. You guys are great. Take
sure.
it easy.
Thank you.
Now Apple does sell an airline power adapter for the new MacBooks. And it looks like a cigarette lighter adapter. But it says on the package, don't use it with your cigarette lighter. And we're trying to figure out why, because it seems to work just fine.
Probably.
And isn't that why the airline industry used what traditionally was a cigarette lighter adapter, so all your old cigarette lighter devices would work in airplanes?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm wondering if there's a power spike problem or something.
Yeah,
like
they
that.
Don't want to be responsible if it winds up destroying something where it's been tested, you know, say with the airlines, depending on the voltage and the airlines and that type of stuff, versus a car.
Well, we're seeing more and more cars now. They don't call it a cigarette lighter anymore. They call it a 12-volt outlet.
Right. Now, what does this thing connect to?
It looks like the cigarette lighter adapter, and in a lot of airplanes, especially.
What's it connect to on the other side?
The MagSafe power adapter on the laptop.
And the reason they don't call it a
cigarette. Well, they don't want you using it in the car. Because then they're, you know, somebody can say, well,
that's
it's Apple's fault.
Yeah, if you have an accident because you're using your computer in the car, you'll blame Apple.
But if they say, well, you shouldn't have been using it in the lighter because we told you not to, they've got a legal reason.
Indemnified.
Yep.
So it's the kids in the back seat. Yeah, because my van has two outlets in the front and two outlets in the back. So
and the reason
so the
they
kids
don't
can smoke
them
in the back seat all by themselves.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
They don't call them cigarette lighters anymore because most cars don't come with even ashtrays anymore.
Yep.
They're just
a 12-volt accessory outlet.
Exactly.
Right. All right. Our next caller is Steve from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Steve. What's your question?
Yeah, I'm using Ubuntu 7.04.
Good for you.
Yeah, I absolutely love it. If they keep going at the development pace they're going, I think it's going to be a fantastic distribution.
7.10 just came out, you know.
Blast.
You snoozed, you lose.
If you go into the...
Wait an hour, 7.11 will be out.
No, yeah, yeah. If you go into administration and run update manager, across the top it'll say, oh, there's a new distribution now. Click here to upgrade.
Okay, I have to check that out.
And then, you know, wait an hour because it's a real upgrade, and so it'll upgrade a lot of stuff.
Okay. But what my question is I just want to be a good internet neighbor.
Yep.
I'm looking for an antivirus package that will actually screen email, not the system. And every antivirus package I found for Ubuntu will scan the file system, but it won't have any kind of an email plugin for any kind of email software aside from the email server. Do you know of one?
There are a couple. If you're using ClamAV has a plugin for email, but I don't. What are you using as your email program?
Right now I'm using Thunderbird, but ideally I'd like to find a solution that's kind of open-ended if I decide to switch.
Oh, right. You want to be able to use pretty much anything you want to use.
Yeah, if I have to use a specific one, I'll live with it, but if I can find one that lets me interchange, it'd be great.
Well, I just found one called Amiviz, A-M-I-V-I-Z, yes. an email antivirus scanner. That looks like it has plugins for most of the antivirus programs,
okay,
including Kaspersky for Unix.
Hmm.
Right, Kaspersky does, Amiviz does, and Amiviz is built in, by the way.
Yeah, I did see that one. Okay.
Great. And that's sort of what we were talking about earlier, that since most of the ISPs scan for viruses before they pass the mail along, email is getting to be less of a virus issue, or viruses are less of an email issue, and now more of a link issue and website spamming issue.
Right. And in fact, Amiviz is really just a kind of a front end that interfaces with a virus scanner you've already got. So if you've got ClamAV and Amiviz, that handles your stuff exactly correctly, and it happens with XM and send mail and postfix and all of that stuff. So give that a try. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Dan Cole, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 49 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
On WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dan Cole.
And at 54 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbites. Real quick before we get back to the phone... Hollywood studios may find it impossible to squash a web-based movement to facilitate the illegal copying of high-definition DVDs, even though the law is on their side because the information's already been distributed so widely. In February, a hacker obtained a decryption key that enables copying of selected and protected HD, DVD, and Blu-ray movies and posted it on the internet. Since then, a consortium of movie studios known as the Advanced Access Content System Licensing Authority, or AXLA, has been waging a quiet war, mostly by sending cease and desist letters to various websites. But you know what? It's out there. It's even being printed on T-shirts, so I don't think they're going to get it back. This news report brought to you by the number 09F9102. I'm not going to go through the whole thing.
Well, the irony was that it got posted on Dig, and then the whatever group it was sent Dig a cease and desist letter, and Dig took it down. So then 20 people posted it. They took them down. And then 120,000 people posted it, and they gave up.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
So now Dig could theoretically be sued and closed down out of existence because of facilitating copyright violation.
Right.
Because so many people keep posting the story. And then that brought up the bigger article of whether you can actually copyright a number or not.
Right.
But it's a key. It's a special number.
It's a special number. Anyway, our next caller is Robert from Palmyra, New York. Welcome, Robert. What's your question?
Yeah, I got a question about my dial-up. I recently upgraded to Windows 2000, and every time I pick up the phone or get a phone call, it turns itself on. And the guy that I got...
The computer turns itself on?
Yeah.
That's a setting in your modem. Wake for access.
Wake on, yeah. On access, yeah.
Yeah, where is that?
You would set that in the modem driver.
Yeah.
Or onset it, in your case.
Basically, it's designed for remote access. So if you're away from your house, you can dial your computer. It will turn on, wake up, whatever, and then you can connect into it. So it's a neat feature if you want it. It's horrible if you don't.
Yeah, I know. It's getting kind of spooky here.
But that's what you have to do. You have to go into the driver setting and turn off wake on access.
Does that got a special title that you can just click on that says wake?
It's one of the choices in the driver. As you go through the stuff in the driver, you'll see there'll be a checkbox, and next to it will say wake on access, or not wake on LAN. I think it's called wake on access.
Okay.
And you just uncheck it, and you're on your way.
Okay, thanks.
Sure. Our next caller is...
It could also be in the power management to wake on access of the modem. So it's either in the modem settings or your power management settings.
Right, and it's been so long since I've used Windows 2000 that that's a little hard to say.
Yeah.
Our next caller is Chris from Henrietta. Welcome, Chris. What's your question?
Hey, guys. I'm on a small home network. I've just got two PCs on a router. One can connect. The other one cannot. And I tried to run the network diagnostics for Windows XP.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a couple of errors. It says there's a connectivity problem exists with an installed LSP. I don't know what that is.
It could be something in your network card driver. Does the network card think it's plugged in? Do you get a link light on the router for that computer?
Yeah, it says it's. And yes, it does. And
is it doing? Make sure it's using DHCP and not trying to grab a unique address.
Or static address. You want it set to automatically obtain address.
Yeah, I tried to do a release and renew, and that didn't work.
Yeah, that's usually a problem in the network card driver or the network card itself.
What you can do is, on our website, you can get it from the other one, is we've got a WinFix XP more or less erases the two WinSock 2 settings in the registry, recreates them, it'll reboot, you run this repair, and it'll try to reboot. When you click at it, what address do you get? If you look at internet connections,
mm-hmm.
What address are you getting?
Well, I've gotten two. One is a 169.
Yeah, that means it's not seeing it. So try with the other machine, download the WinFix. What is it?
It's Win32 fix.
Yeah, Win32 fix. Copy it onto a disk, put it on the other machine, and run that. It will repair the registry, then shut the machine down, restart
there
it.
There is and see WinSock fix.
WinSock fix.
Yeah, you gotta get the right syntax to find
so many
it.
Of them.
Yeah,
right.
Windows. Yeah, WinSock fix.
Give that a shot.
Yep. On the links page.
Got it. Thanks,
all right, we are done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to apologize to everyone to whom we did not get. Call earlier, call often. Or, of course, you can post your stuff in the forums. We are done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. I particularly want to thank the mighty Dan Cole, who normally is so ably the producer of the morning show here with Beth and Chad and John DiTullio and Liz Bonus and, me every day. And he does a great job there, and he's done at least as good a job here, if not even better, keeping the wild men on track today. So I want to thank him for that. I'm Nick Francesco. It's 59 minutes after the hour. It's been Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.